Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Yes, welcome one and all to Fender Bender for another week. My name is Tim Nicholson. This is Joy 94.9's very own motoring program, and we are super excited to have your company on this lovely Saturday. Big thanks to Mark and Joe for the escape pod, 2 hours of Mark and Joe, and that's never enough, if you ask me. They are wonderful human beings. This is Fender Bender, and I am joined in the studio by some wonderful men. First of all, Mike Costello, how are you?
I'm a little happy today, Tim.
You are happy, aren't you?
It is a football-related thing, so I don't know how many of you listeners out there are football followers, but I'm a Hawks fan, and Tim, unfortunately for him, is a Geelong fan, so...
That's correct.
Tough night, mate.
And I wish... I'm happy for you, and I hope that all of your team get a really bad case of scabies.
Wow,
and,
that's an oddly specific...
STI
condition that you want to inflict on the team, yeah. True.
No, but I wish you the best of luck next week, and I will obviously be barracking for whoever you're playing.
That's so harsh.
Now, we're also very excited to have in the studio for the very first time the very lovely Tony O'Kane. Tony, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. You're well. Have you had a good week? Had a busy week?
Yeah, I've been busy, but you know, I'm happy to be here. It's great to pop my radio cherry.
It is.
Popping cherries is always a fun time in my experience, so this should be good.
And let us know if it hurts. At any point, just say, look, slow down.
We should probably have a safe word, shouldn't we?
I think so. What should that be?
Please stop.
Okay.
Do you know, I'm stunned.
I was gonna say V8.
I'm frankly stunned that it took us 5 minutes and 40 seconds to get the first sexual innuendo or pun-related material into the show.
I think we
need to do better next week.
It doesn't normally take that long, does it? It is a little bit outrageous.
And Tony, of course, is he's the road test editor of the Motor Report.
Mm-hmm. Sure am.
You know. So you get to drive lots of sexy metal, don't you?
Quite a lot of sexy metal. Quite a lot of unsexy metal. But you know, perhaps we can talk about both today.
Well, that's
so during the week, we are, of course, deadly rivals, working for rival publications.
It's true.
But on the weekend, we all come together and share our love of cars.
That's it. So no scratching today, guys. Mm-hmm. Just keep it... Keep it nice, keep it pretty. I'm sure we can all do that. Now, we've got quite a big show coming up. We're going to be talking about V8s, HSVs, Australian muscle cars. We're going to get really butch today, actually. So my voice will probably lower a little bit later.
But it's already so baritone, Tim.
Right.
How low can it go?
Well, it depends how large my testes get. What am I saying? look, we will see how we go. But we're going to talk about that. And we've got a lot of news coming up. And very shortly, we're going to cross to the fabulous Dean Beck, who is... at the Australian Rugby Championships, where the Melbourne Chargers, who are the gay team, are playing in the final. So we're going to find out what the hell's going on there. Now, this is a car show. It's all about cars. But for the first little bit of this show, it's going to be about sport. We've already talked about football. And we are crossing to the extremely fabulous Dean Beck, who is at the Purchase Cup. Dean, where are you? How are you? What's happening?
I am actually at the Harlequins ground at Holmes Glen Reserve in Ashwood, would you believe?
Listen to it.
I have never felt further out of my depth than I am right now at the Purchase Cup final. The game is literally only seconds away from being finished. You can hear the carry-on in the background.
Is it outrageous carry-on?
They're playing the Brisbane Hustlers.
The Brisbane Hustlers. Oh, fantastic. And there's some quite interesting names of teams there, I believe.
Yes, we've got, the Melbourne Chargers. We've got the Barbarians. Melbourne Chargers, interestingly, their host club is the Melbourne Unicorns. There's something in that for all of us. we're here at the Harlequins Club, but we're watching the game, the final of the Purchase Cup, being played between the Sydney Convicts and the Brisbane Hustlers. Tim, I have Sam Mentor here with me, president of the Melbourne Chargers. Sam, you must be very pleased with how the day's gone thus far.
Dean, I'm ecstatic. We have a fantastic crowd out here, and a lot of players. We got 4 teams for the first time ever in the Purchase Cup, and the rugby's just been played in great spirit. Everyone's having a great time. The weather's great.
the first game the Chargers played today, they were thrashed, but they came good in the final, which was the consolation final. They won 29-12 against the Barbarians. You must be pleased with how the team went there.
I'm disappointed, obviously, to lose to the Hustlers, but we'd heard that they were gunning for the Convicts, and they came ready to play in the first game, and they gave us a bit of a thumping. But it was really good for us to get up in the second game. We scored a couple of meat pies, and that was fantastic. It was nice to get a win.
We are literally in the final seconds of the Purchase Cup currently being played between the Convicts and the Hustlers. The score on the board at the moment is 17-12, and it's currently in the hands of the Hustlers. It's been a fantastic game today, Sam.
Yeah, the final particularly, as you're saying, it's in progress. The Hustlers are having a real crack at the Convicts. I mean, obviously the world champions, the Convicts seem to beat, but the Hustlers are going really, really well. Great thing for gay rugby.
We should add that tonight the Melbourne Chargers have a very special fundraising event on at Circuit Bar in Smith Street, Fitzroy. Melbourne Chargers in the flesh. What's all that about?
Yeah, that's right. At Circuit Bar, which is our sponsor bar, tonight we've got, as you say, Chargers in the flesh. It's a full Monty show, and I'm promised there will be tasteful nudity.
tasteful nudity. There you go.
Actually, before I go on too much about that, I do want to recognise that we've got a couple of guys from the Rebels here. So we've got the chairman of Rebels Rugby here, Jonathan Ling, a couple of players, Jared Safi and Tom Sexton. And it's actually really good for us to have guys of that weight coming and supporting gay rugby in Victoria.
The Rebels, of course, are Melbourne's very own rugby union club, and they're out in force to support you today.
That's correct, and it falls into line with the AAU recently having announced they've got an anti-discrimination policy leading the football codes in that respect. It's really good that we've got that sort of high-level peak body support for what we're trying to do, which is grow the footprint of rugby in Victoria.
Now, Sam, next year, in August of 2014, the Bingham Cup comes to Australia. This is about 1,500 players from around the world, something like 40 teams coming to Sydney for the International Gay Rugby Tournament.
Yeah, that's right, and if today's anything to go by, it's going to be a cracker.
Now, Sam, we have just had the final of the game.
13 Purchase Cup, grand final, Convicts retain the cup.
17-12, the final score. Ben Lankin there in the background, you can hear him. Sam, congratulations on a great day. Congratulations to the Sydney Convicts. Tim, I think we should go back to you at the studio if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you very much, Dean Beck, there at the Purchase Cup. Fantastic. And congratulations, of course, to the winners. The Sydney Convicts, they are world champions, and they're doing a great thing and being very inclusive, and we congratulate them for their win. And as you heard, there is some tasteful nudity at Circuit Bar tonight. I prefer my nudity distasteful, but good for them. And we've got a lot more coming up just around the corner. This is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. My name is Tim Nicholson. I'm here with Mike Costello and the lovely Tony O'Kane. How's it going? First time, you're all good? No
great,
dramas?
Great, yeah.
Okay, not painful
like
yet.
Like a duck to
not
water.
Yet. Yep. It's true. Now, this is a motoring show. It's been very football-focused for the first little bit of it, but we're going to move on to cars now, guys. And, look, it's been a bit of a quiet week because it's post, you know, Frankfurt show. It's been a bit crazy. It's the week after.
It's the come down. Mm. You know, it's the week where we're all collectively in the industry just drinking plenty of water and just
bottles.
Kicking back, you know?
Yeah. It's true. So it's good. It's good to kind of have that bit of a down week. Not that nothing's been happening. Something very exciting that I think both of you two are a little bit excited about. Mm-hmm. Honda came out with some big news this week, boys.
Look, sure did. We've sunk the boots into Honda repeatedly here. they've lost their way somewhat lately, but they've shown some signs of life recently. They said they're going to go back into Formula One supplying engines. They're going to release a Civic Type R turbo. They're going to return to the hot hatch market. And this week, their local arm confirmed that the next generation NSX Ferrari fighting supercar will be sold in Australia. Now, they've been saying all along they wanted it, but they hadn't actually said that it was a guarantee they were going to be able to get their hands on it. Mm. But they're going to. And it's so amazing to see Honda coming back into that, because when the original NSX came out in 1990, it basically turned the supercar market on its head. You had Japanese reliability with exotic supercar style and speed, and the new one promises to be just that, and hopefully it can, I guess, be the start of a renaissance of Honda's regular cars as well.
How do you think it compares, this design, to the original design, Tony? Are you a fan?
Well, you know, the first generation NSX was really a landmark car in terms of design. It was it really made people look up and notice Japanese cars as being not just a value pick or anything like that. It was something that was sexy and desirable. This new car, I think, it's still got, you know, the sleek two-door low supercar shape that we expect. The styling is very much out there, and you know, I think it should do well on that basis alone. It certainly looks distinctive.
So it's going to be like their hero car. Could we guess how much this thing is going to be sold for in Australia, though?
200, I would suggest. The old one was 200. I can't see it being much less. It's a very complicated car. It's got three electric motors and a petrol engine. It's a tour de force of technology, which you need to remember that this is going to be a McLaren, Ferrari, Lamborghini rivaling car in terms of its pace. The Nissan GT-R is getting up towards 200 grand, and if that thing's nearly 200, there's no way in hell the NSX will be any less.
Well, this is surely going to be the cheapest of the hybrid supercars, because there's, as you said, I think the Porsche have got a 918.
Yeah,
and
McLaren have the P1, and Ferrari's working on the tech. It's the new Vogue, because everyone's saying, well, you don't necessarily just need to use electric motors for economy. You can use them to give you an extra boost of power as well.
It's very exciting. Lots of Honda fanboys, I think, will be very excited about this.
So, well, yeah, you can count me among them. I'm keen to check this thing out in the metal. I think it should be quite special.
Yeah.
It's a good thing Tony's sitting down right now.
It's true.
Very excited about this car.
Hiding his
can life. Someone hand me a cushion or something? This is awkward.
It's true. No, very exciting. And look, another announcement this week from local car maker Holden. They're bringing their own supercar into Australia. Okay, it might not be supercar, but they're getting a little bit sporty. At least.
Yes. It's just, you know, everyone is getting into this cheap and cheerful end of the market now. It's the year of the warm hatch. The warm hatch isn't quite a hot hatch. We're not talking about Polo, GDI, Fiesta, ST type cars here, little absolute pocket dynamos, but just sort of fettled, slightly warmer than your average Bear Light cars. And everybody's doing them, and Holden's the latest. They've been selling a car called the Barina RS in America for a while now. It's not called the Barina RS there, but it is the Barina RS as we know it. They're bringing it here. It's got an engine from the Cruze, which is one size above it. So it's not going to be an absolute speed machine, but it will be punchy. It'll have a bit of kick. It'll be low 20,000s.
Is it a turbo?
Yeah, little 1.4 turbo.
Oh, that's a good little engine.
From the Cruze.
Yeah.
And, you know, these cars make a whole lot of sense in Australia because we've got ludicrously low speed limits. Everyone drives in a city congestion. It's so hard to find a bit of tarmac that's actually free of Sunday drivers. So a little car that isn't all about outright speed actually makes a whole lot of sense. And hot hatches like this, or warm hatches like this, in a lot of ways in the modern world, are the real fun machine, you know?
So it's not going to be quite your Fiesta ST hotness.
No, I think they're talking about outputs of something like 103 kilowatts, 200 newton meters, which is a fair bit shy of the Fiesta RS. But it's a small car. It weighs hardly anything, so it shouldn't need a lot of power to be to feel fun and sporty.
It's a funny little car, the Barina. It's not an awful light car, but it's certainly not the best in
show. It's not
the
pinnacle.
It's mediocre.
Yeah.
It's fundamentally mediocre.
And, you know, I love the look of it. I think it's a really tough-looking little thing, but
it just needs the engine to give it a real appeal, and hopefully this RS does that.
It might do it, exactly. Now, Tesla. Good old Tesla. Now, there's a bit of a delay, Mike.
Kicking goals.
What the hell is happening with Tesla in Australia?
Tesla in Australia has fallen victim to Tesla internationally.
Right.
See, Tesla, Elon Musk, who founded PayPal, and
say
he's got
again.
His own, Elon Musk,
oh, yeah.
Not a very glamorous name. He founded PayPal. He has his own space agency. He does, SpaceX.
Amazing.
He's making spaceships. And he also owns, operates, and founded Tesla, who for a long time were kind of a bit of a laughing stock in a lot of ways. They were making these high-end electric cars, and they were losing money hand over fist. But then they released the Model S, which is that luxury Grand Tourer, and lo and behold, the thing was absolutely amazing. It's the safest car ever tested in America, ever, of any car. It is getting 5 stars from every person who matters in the industry, and so they're selling tons of them, more than they can make. They're moving into Europe, they're moving into Asia, they're growing in America. In fact, in California, Tesla outsold Jaguar.
That's bonkers.
Has outsold Jaguar for the year so far.
That's incredible.
All of that means The Tesla Model S was supposed to be in Australia now, and it won't be here until this time next year.
Okay.
Or maybe a little earlier, because they just... It's Australia just isn't that high in the pecking order, unfortunately.
Is this a plug-in hybrid? No, it's a full electric
vehicle. It's a full electric car. Yeah.
Is it? I wonder if there is any part of the delay anything to do with the lack of infrastructure in this country yet? Or?
Look, it is, naturally. And EVs, EV sales are low here, and this is a bigger issue because in most markets, there's some policy in place to encourage you to buy an electric car. It's if there are tolls, you don't pay them. If there's a congestion charge, you don't pay that. Yeah. You get your own dedicated lanes, you get tax breaks, you get all sorts of things. Europe does it, most of China does it, California does it. If you want people to buy green cars, you need to, you know, give them a bit of carrot and a lot of stick, as the saying goes. And don't you turn that around.
I would never. Do we need to step up in Australia, Tony, with the EV-wise?
I think so. I mean, there's a distinct lack of incentivization going on from the Australian government with regards to green cars, like, you know, plug-in hybrids and full electric cars. That's been lacking, and it's no wonder that we see uptake of these kinds of vehicles being pretty minimal.
Yeah. Well, I think it's probably going to stay that way with a government that's just been elected.
Yeah. We all know carbon tax is a load of crap.
Okay. That's right. What's carbon?
Can't even see it.
That's it.
But look, it's so disheartening, isn't it? Just to go on a tangent, the first week is already dismantling stuff.
I keep forgetting and then realising what happened. Oh, that's right.
You know, I skipped the country for the election and I've come back to a Tony Abbott run Australia.
I know, right? Anyway. Sexy times ahead, guys. But look, anyway, I'm personally very, 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 very excited about Tesla coming.
Look, it's an amazing... I'm actually going to drive the thing in Tokyo in a few months' time and we will have a review on that.
Yes.
Coming relatively shortly. In the grand cosmic scheme, it'll be coming.
Not far away. Not far away at all. Now, some news coming out of Sweden, guys. And I put this in here because I know how much Mike likes to say the town where these cars are built. I'm talking about Saab. And they are built in...
Trollhättan.
That's it. Look, we all thought Saab was dead. Apparently not. It's been resurrected as an EV company. I don't know what it stands for. NEVS.
National Electric Vehicle of Sweden or something?
Yeah,
something like that.
That sounds about right. And the news is that production has recommenced at Trollhättan on the 9-3.
Which we should not forget dates back to 2002. This is a car that is over a decade old.
And it was old when it launched, the platform that it's sitting on. You know, the name Trollhättan, I kind of imagine a sequence of elves making the cars in Trollhättan.
Elves are that, trolls.
It just it has a Lord of the Rings type vibe to it, Trollhättan. We're going to the realm of Trollhättan. Yeah. You know, it's very strange.
But look, I mean, wouldn't they just wait? Because, you know, eventually they will be an EV manufacturer. Wouldn't you just wait however long it's going to take them to do that? To get their technology together, and then they bring out a new vehicle with this technology. Why this isn't even an EV? It's a, like a combustion engine 9-3.
Yeah, I think it's got like a 2-liter engine of. I'm not even sure if it's a GM engine anymore or whatever. But I mean, they have a new vehicle which was based on the Phoenix concept. It's basically the new 9-3. In my opinion, it kind of looks a bit weird, but you can Google image that if you want.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know whether it's going to be a winner for them. You can't really survive with just one model.
Do you know, if they're using old tech, there's no reason why it shouldn't be dirt cheap. Yeah. And if you could get a Saab 9-3 for 20 grand, yeah, you'd do it, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Probably get a few.
And, look, there's so much love for that brand. There really is. I mean, I was quite devastated when they went under, and I'm not even that, you know, into them, but...
Just ask any architect what their favourite car is, and they will probably
they're all forced to drive BMWs with this, you know, a regretful tinge about it. And they've got something they can go back into, which is good.
Exactly. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how that goes, and I think we will monitor the sales of the 9-3 and let people know how that has
Not coming to Australia, by the way, yet.
No.
So just
hold on to your horses, guys. Now, speaking of the election, just bringing it back very, very quickly, we saw during the week, now I don't know if this is going to be good or bad news to our lovely listeners, but Sophie Mirabella lost the seat of Indi to Cathy McGowan. She's not loved, is she?
Look, Sophie was a very acerbic character, controversial figure, a strong figure, and I suppose the one negative of it is there would have been two women in Mr. Abbott's cabinet. Can't now there is only one.
What's the world come to?
Which is, you know, she's a very formidable person, but also not someone who engenders a lot of affection from a lot of areas of the community.
Which I think comes from ignoring her entire election.
Now, the issue that is she would have been the Minister for Industry, who is the person in control of providing government funding to Holden, Toyota and Ford, all the parts makers, the ones that basically keep the Aussie car industry running as we know it, such as it is. Now, she has been replaced by a very old, wise head named Ian Macfarlane, who was the minister under the Howard government. His nickname is the Chainsaw, because he talks like this. He has a very husky voice.
I was wondering why.
We don't quite know. We'll keep it brief, but he's come out this week and he's said... He's come out this week. It's so much diversity in this cabinet. He's come out this week and he said, we really want to see the Aussie car industry remain. We're going to do everything we can to keep it going, which is a bit of a change because the coalition's been a bit iffy about it. Holden has said, you better give us some idea of what you're going to give us by year's end or we're going to walk, essentially. And... hopefully they can come to some sort of agreement. This is actually coming to a head. We're going to find out what's happening with Holden in the next few months. And if Holden does go, you can bet your money that Toyota won't be far behind them, in my opinion.
Yep.
So this is a pivotal few months if you care about locally made cars.
Yep. It's going to be interesting, and we will keep you updated, of course. That's what we do here at Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have anything to say or ask us, 0427JOY949 or email onair at joy.org.au. Very shortly, we are going to be turning very butch and talking about muscle cars. So if you're into that kind of thing...
You should have told me, Tim. I would have worn my flannel.
You do have a flannel.
I always keep an emergency flannel on me, just in case moments like this crop up.
Yeah. It's true.
Brought in some Bundy.
This is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Tim, Mike and Tony here with you for another 28 and a half minutes. Fairly specific.
That was a very Germanic time reading.
Thank you.
Precise to the core.
Well, you know what? I don't have any Germanic in me today.
I should do it. I was waiting for that.
It has to happen at least five times. I think we're contractually obliged to have double entendres most of the way through the show. Look, we've been talking about a bit of news, but we're going to change tack now. We're going to butch up. Tony's got the mullet. Mike, you've got your flannel at the ready.
Got my tinny in one hand, my Winnie Red in the other.
Winnie Where Reds? I used to smoke Winnie Reds.
Really?
Yeah.
Winnie Reds. Wow.
16s, guys.
Hardcore.
Yeah. Didn't last long, and I'd probably just... like suck it in a little bit and then anyway, that's my childhood. We won't be talking about that. Now look, we are in Australia. We're all closet bogans. I think we've admitted that. Right out there. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And you guys have in the last week been experiencing cars that some people might see as bogan, but there's something really quite appealing about a big car. Of course, I'm talking about HSV, Holden Special Vehicles. Are they still bogan cars? I'm going to say it.
You're going to say it.
Well, I'm going to ask.
Well, you know, this. I've actually been driving the new HSV Malu this week for my car of the week, my review car of the week. Tony coincidentally had it the week before. It's the cheapest HSV you can get. Everyone's always thought that the HSV Malu is almost like a super, or almost like a coupe with a massive boot, rather than a work ute. It's a coupe with a really enormous boot that you can put a lot of stuff in. And look, I tell you what, when you're in a car with a rumbling V8 exhaust note, you can't help but sort of unleash the inner bogan. You just want to rev it a bit too often, take off from the lights a bit too quickly. you know, just get a little bit. Aggressive in corners.
Yeah,
they're quite tail happy cars. All marked bogan activity, and it kind of brings out the beast within. I think having a car like that, there's something so unrefined about them, but in a good way. Because every car now is so not every car, but most expensive cars now of that ilk are so the edges are so smoothed off, they're so refined, and there's something a bit animalistic and a bit rough around the edges. And what could be more bogan than that?
That's true. That's true. Is that appealing? Do you find that appealing, Tony?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not your typical HSV buyer, you could say. But, you know, I spent the past week in the HSV GTS, which is at the polar opposite of the scale to the Maloo that Mike has been driving. It's their most expensive car. It's their most high-performance vehicle. But, God, it's just so quick. It's hard not to love it just because of the raw power and the sensations that it gives you when you just floor that throttle. It's just incredibly quick.
All right. So you feel that you're most masculine. I know I do when I'm in one of those cars. It's automatically a butcher.
Yeah, well,
I get in it clean shaven and I get out of it with a full beard.
I actually sprout an extra testicle.
So you've got four.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I need to see the doctor quite urgently.
And this is, I mean, this is probably the end of the line for these sorts of cars. Because if Holden, I mean, we know Ford's going. If Holden does continue, the next Commodore will be almost certainly be a front-wheel drive, probably four-cylinder, mid-size American-spec car that's assembled here but not designed here. Mm. Probably. That seems to be the line of thinking at the moment among the commentariat. And that would probably spell the end of the big V8 fuel-drinking, rear-wheel drive muscle cars. Mm. And Australia and America are really the only two countries in the world that still have that love for the muscle car. And Australia is so unique because we have our own tiny little niche brand called HSV. And I don't know what their future holds because they base all their stuff on the Commodore architecture and where they go from here, I don't know. I mean, but let's enjoy it while it lasts.
Well, I totally agree. Should they have diversified a bit earlier? I know back in the 90s and even the parts of the noughties, they based Astras. They had Astra-based HSVs and things like that. Should they have done that a bit earlier?
Well, they had the Astra VXR, and prior to that, didn't they have some kind of early model Astra four-cylinder thing back in the early 90s, I think.
The Pulsar-based Astra. There was an SV2000 or something, SV-something, anyway.
Your Bogan is showing.
I'll put it back.
Please. So you know, they're not strangers to cars that don't have eight cylinders. Mm. That's for sure. But whether they'll be able to survive as a brand, given that's such a core part of their image, once the Commodore disappears, we'll have to wait and see, I think.
Do you think they could shoehorn... Let's say, worst case scenario, the next Commodore is a bloody Malibu or an Impala-based car or something like that. Mm. Could they shoehorn a US-built V8 into something like that and keep going?
It's a little bit difficult because you've got floor pans that are specifically designed for front-wheel drive and you've got floor pans that are specifically designed for rear-wheel drive. Unless those are available as an all-wheel drive platform, you physically can't really do it. It's not feasible. It's very expensive. Mm. You know, anything's possible, but yeah, there's a cost attached.
Yep.
Hopefully, they'll have something rear-wheel drive that they can play with. Mm. I mean, Ford, we all know that the Falcon's disappearing, but performance fans of Ford will be able to buy a Mustang, which is rear-wheel drive.
Yeah.
So they'll be catered for with that. Whether Holden does the same thing when they get rid of the Commodore, the rear-wheel drive Commodore, is, we'll have to see.
Exactly.
Well, you know, the current Camaro, which is the famous American iconic muscle car, was developed in Australia. Mm. Australia basically did that car.
Yeah.
And we can do it again if given free rein to do so.
Yeah.
And I do hope that General Motors recognises the talent the local guys have, because it could be something great. Yeah. And that would be a potential. Now, I really hope the HSV remains, and worse comes to worse, if Holden stops making cars here, they will, of course, continue to sell cars here, just as an importer. And you would imagine that they would want some sort of performance halo.
Yeah.
A bit like Ford bringing in a Mustang. And I would suspect Holden would, in that case, look at a Camaro.
You'd think so.
Of course, speaking strictly hypothetically here. But if that was to happen. And that would be HSV's future, if you ask me. Yeah. I can't, in my mind, see HSV moving away from the muscle car scene. For them, I think they're so intrinsically linked to that muscle car thing. It's that or it's nothing.
Yep. Hmm. It's very interesting. It's very sad. The current lineup, I think, looks fantastic. I think the VE-based, the later VE Series 2-based HSVs, I thought looked just a little bit garish and outrageous. This one we had
They've classed it up.
They have a bit. Senator, we had a Senator Signature at work the other day.
I'm in that right now.
Are you?
Yeah. Ah. Classy machine.
Don't you think it looks great?
I think it looks fantastic.
And you still get looked at. Like, I got looked at in that car, I think, more than any other car. Well, apart from the fact that I'm in a powder blue 500 at the moment and I'm sitting there with my boyfriend who has the same kind of beard as me, people are looking at us going, what's going on in that car? Anyway, whatever.
I think we all know what's going on in the car.
Well, that's true.
There's no mysteries here.
No. But the Senator is if I can say it, a classy-looking HSV. I think they've done well with that.
Oh, yeah, you're certainly not wrong.
Yeah. And the Maloo is a little bit more sedate this time around. That doesn't have that weird thing.
You can get the Batman sailplane as an option, but Maloo, you don't have to. Yeah. And for me, having lived with the Malu for a few days now, in many ways, it is an ideal car for me.
Really?
I don't care about fuel consumption. I really don't. I just don't care.
What if you want to
It's an extra
30
or 40 bucks a week, but think of all the pleasure that you get for that.
Yeah.
That's a few beers down at the pub.
That's true.
You know? So you could have an economical, boring car and drink another four beers at the pub, or you could say no to those four beers and have an awesome car all the time. Thank you very much.
That's the logic right there.
And you can put lots of stuff in the back of it. You're sorted.
How do you think these... So the current crop of Australian muscle cars compares to the classics, like your 60s Monaros and GTHOs and that kind
Let's
of thing?
Let's not have rose-tinted glasses. Classic cars were terrible. 60s and 70s cars were awful.
Wow.
They are awful to drive. What's great about them is the way they look, the way they sound, the emotional attachment and the historical baggage is great. Mm. Things like the GTHO of the 70s, amazing cars. Mm. Now, to drive, compared to a modern car, incredibly heavy steering, four-speed or three-speed transmissions and no safety features, they're not comparable in traditional terms, but in terms of perhaps an emotional attachment, pretty damn cool.
Yeah. Do you think, Tony, when you were growing up, did you have any kind of particular allegiance to Ford or Holden? Were you obsessed with, like, a, you know, the VN Commodore or anything like the sporty versions of that?
Well, not really. When I was when I was a young kid, I grew up in Hong Kong, so I wasn't exposed to the Australian muscle car scene at all. So for me, my hero cars were things like Testarossas and stuff. Things I saw bankers driving around in Hong Kong.
Expensive taste.
Bankers?
Yeah.
Did you pronounce that B right?
Yeah.
That's true.
But for me, you know, they still hold a lot of appeal, mainly for the nostalgia aspect. I mean, like Mike said, they don't go around corners. They're not safe. If you crash, you're probably effed.
That's true. And look, it's interesting because, I mean, for a period, there was kind of really no competition for these cars. But now, you don't have to buy a big V8 to obviously get the performance at a price. You've got these hot hatches that we talk about a bit on this show because we love them. And they're you know, you can afford them and they perform beautifully.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, you get something like a Fiesta ST, like we mentioned before, but point to point along a curvy road, that'll definitely be faster than any muscle car from 60s and 70s or 80s. You know, things have moved on.
Yeah.
You're in a HSV, second gear, down through the gears.
Oh, yeah.
Sharp left-hander, plant the foot, hang it sideways, smoke billowing,
bassy
engine note vibrating through your chest. You don't get that in a Fiesta ST.
And the great thing about HSVs, modern HSVs, is that they do actually handle. They're not some sort of dumb machine that just goes fast in a straight line. They actually do go around corners very, very well.
That's true.
They've got a very good suspension.
Would you have one?
You know, I probably would.
Really?
I probably would. It depends on what I'm shopping it against, but in terms of bang for buck, they're hard to beat.
That's true. Mike, I already know that you would.
Shut, yes. Absolutely.
Look, well, let us know. Are you a bogan at home? 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think of Australian muscle cars? Are you sad that potentially they might not exist in a few years, but hopefully they will? In other news, I do have to say something very quickly. James, your Lexus IS250 is lame, and your boyfriend's SV6 goes faster. I have been told to say that by
Burn.
An anonymous texter. So hopefully that has worked. And I don't think that about Lexus. I think the IS is probably quite a good little car.
Yeah, I'm quite fond of it.
Yeah, you're a big fan, aren't you?
Yeah, my Lexus burner is showing.
Listen to it.
Outrageous.
I think it's the first time those two particular words, and I won't repeat
Lexus.
Them because I'm a tasteful man, Tony.
Yes.
But that's the first time that those two words have ever been said side by side in human history.
That's
we have
true.
Just achieved something.
You just don't hang around me often enough.
I say and quite now
often.
I know why.
Because your Lexus bone is always out. This is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9.
You know, Tim, I think it's time that we gave some consumer advice.
Please, I love that.
We've just had a message from Aaron with a car question, exclamation mark afterwards, car question. He's very keen. Hi, team, he says, I need some help. My VW Golf GT Sport 1.4 TSI is coming to the end of its lease, and I suspect the end of its life.
Ooh.
The GT Sport, the Mach 5 Golf, was the first twin-charged Golf that they made. Very good car. Good choice in car, Aaron. To cut a very long story short, I have lost any shred of allegiance to the VW brand
Ooh.
After having not one, but two, but three engine replacements. I probably said good car too early, didn't I? In less than 60,000 kilometres. Wow. I've just spent another $4,000 replacing the exhaust manifold and throttle control, not under warranty, as they were bolted onto the new engines. Oh, dear. He wants to know if he should consider a Gen 6 VW Golf GTD, which, of course, is the diesel version of the GTI. Yeah. So it's a relatively unknown car here. In Europe, it's an enormously popular car. They are mad for oil burners. Diesels over there. Over here, not so much. Everybody buys the GTI. The GTD is a very, very good car. And interestingly enough, we do know that Volkswagen has had some controversies surrounding it in terms of recalls of late, some reliability issues allegedly. Obviously, Aaron has had that experience.
It's interesting.
The diesels, however, are renowned for having fewer problems.
Right.
Now, you're saying that you sort of, Aaron, you're a bit over the Volkswagen brand. Yeah. And perhaps in your situation, that's understandable. And there are a lot of alternatives. If you're looking for a hot hatch, a hot diesel hatch, not so common.
No.
There's not really many beyond the GTD here. If you like that sort of diesel power, the unique characteristics of a diesel, which indeed there are unique characteristics, and the low fuel consumption, it has to be something European because nobody else really does them to any great degree. And the GTD is the obvious choice.
But I think surely a smaller car with an economical petrol engine could still be an option. It's not as economical as a diesel, obviously, but I don't know, maybe he should consider.
Look, in my experience, in my experience, from what I know, the diesel Volkswagens have had fewer complaints about them than the petrol ones. Yeah. There are issues with diesel, though. They are more expensive to service, diesels, across every brand. And, you know, if you have issues with the brand, I mean, it's a tough decision to make.
That's the thing, because it is. I think I agree. Apparently, it is a good little car, but if I'd had that experience, I wouldn't be even considering that brand.
Frankly, no. I agree. No. There's so much competition in the hot hatch market now. If you don't have a satisfactory experience at a brand, there's no real need to go back. No. You've got Ford Focus ST is a fabulous car. Renault Sport RS. You've got in that hot hatch market, there are so many choices. The GTD, in my experience, to give a long-winded answer, is a good car. There's nothing wrong with it, and I don't know of any issues that have been had with the car myself. But if you've lost hope in Volkswagen,
shop around.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, you could probably get a really good price on an Opel Astra OPC right now.
Probably, they're probably doing some quite competitive deals.
That is an excellent point. Opel, of course, have left Australia. They had some cars to get rid of. Good chance. Go and speak to one of the Opel dealers.
If they're open.
I think they're still there getting rid of old stock, as far as I know. Okay. I'm not quite sure. Look into it.
But look, good luck, and let us know how you go. If you want to text in at some point down the track, we would love to hear from you and find out how you went with your purchase. Now, boys, we all work for rival publications to the one that I'm about to talk about, Wheels Magazine. It's been around. We've all read it since we were kids.
Oh, yes.
It's brilliant. It's good for them. Amazing. We always talk about the car of the year on this show as well. Now, their latest edition has caused just a little bit of controversy around Australia.
Yes, the editor, Steve Corby, is he's very savvy when it comes to getting publicity for his magazine. This is no exception. Quite a clever move, I think. They've roped in a journalist from the UK named Ben Oliver, and he has been tasked with driving from Melbourne to Sydney, or was it the other way around, at 130 kilometres an hour on the Hume Highway. The Hume Highway, of course, is the default. When everyone says speed limit should be higher, which is most car-oriented, car-enthusiastic people, they say the speed limit should be higher. The Hume Highway is always a prime example because it's a multi-lane, dead straight, no danger type road, and the speed limits are so low that you fall asleep at the wheel. The argument is if you drive quicker, you're more alert, you're more active, and you get there faster. They put this to the test. They didn't get a single speeding fine. They got there quicker, and the consensus from Wheels is that this is a good thing. The speed limit should be upped. In Europe, the speed limit would be 130 on that road. If it was in Germany, there wouldn't be a speed limit on that road, and both of those tend to result in fewer crashes than here. But Wheels' stunt has caused a huge amount of controversy, which is exactly what they wanted, of course. We're speaking about it. Everybody's been talking about it. I'm sure this will be the biggest selling edition of Wheels in a long, 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 long time.
Absolutely. Look, and I saw he was on a couple of television programs during the week, The Project on Channel 10, I believe Today Tonight as well. And I must say, The Project are normally pretty safe, but Charlie Pickering in particular had a real go at him. And was like, what if somebody actually died? You know, he was really kind of putting it back on.
Look,
on
it is
Stephen
this
Corby.
Foolish argument that speed is the sole contributor to fatalities on the road. a skilled driver with driver training driving at 130 kilometres an hour is less dangerous than an unskilled, under-trained driver driving at 100. The point is that Ben Oliver is a very experienced journalist and a very, very good driver. Mm. Him at 130 kilometres an hour, which he would do in Europe, where he lives, is perfectly safe, in my opinion.
Yep.
And I think that what this has done is it's controversial, yes, but I have a lot of respect for it because it's got people talking about the issue. Mm. And it's an issue that continually comes up and then disappears again. Mm. And I want it to have some staying power. Because to my mind, when you drive 130, you're more alert, you're more active, you get there faster if you know what you're doing behind the wheel, and it all comes back to driver training then.
And that's the thing, absolutely, though. And there is, we don't have that level of driver training that we do in other countries here in Australia. I mean, do you think it's dangerous, Tony, for somebody to be going at this speed who isn't a journalist, who isn't a trained driver?
Well, I think the problem with this country when we're talking about raising speed limits is that, as Mike said, you know, the standard of driver training is just not up to the task of putting people at those kind of speeds. Most people, when they're sitting for their licence, would rarely venture onto a highway. They'd rarely be doing triple digit speeds. They'd, you know, do their parallel park and go back to the Vic Roads office or whatever and get their license. Over in Europe, it's a much different thing. Not only is it more stringent, they have to satisfy a lot more requirements and more testing, but it's also more expensive. So people take it far more seriously than they do in this country. So all we need to do is just have a serious look at what we're doing in terms of driver training and really, really up the standard. And then once that's done, I think, then we can start thinking about putting people on roads with faster limits.
Okay, so chicken and egg. We need to kind of reevaluate what we're
address
doing.
Address the cause, yeah. Don't address the symptom.
Yeah.
But, of course, governments are short-sighted things, and that won't happen. But, look, what it's done is it's got everybody talking about the issue, and it's a very savvy publicity move, and let's not forget that.
I think it's very interesting as well because a lot of people have just not really kind of looked into exactly what they've done. And I think they've gone, oh, we can't do that. I don't think they're suggesting they do that on every single, you know, regional road. It's just kind of roads that can handle it. And I think people have kind of gotten a bit confused about that and go, oh, we can't do that. It's like, we're not saying we're going to go 130 on a cruddy highway from between Ballarat and Hamilton, which is a shocking road, FYI. So, you know, would be sensible about
it. And people forget, say you're driving in Germany on an Autobahn. There are a lot of people that drive really slow, and that's okay because they sit in the slow lane and they never leave it.
Yeah.
And the really quick people sit in the quick lane and they flash if somebody's in the way and the person
moves.
They do. They flash.
Headlights.
Get your mind out of the gutter.
Damn it.
And it's all, everybody behaves themselves. And we're not saying everybody has to drive 130k an hour or that you're a danger on the road. If you want to drive 80, that's fine. Just stay the hell in the slow lane and free up a fast lane for people who want to drive quickly, and then everybody can get along.
That's another issue, though, as well. Australian drivers are very aggressive.
Territorial, aggressive, and selfish. As a rule, if you sit under the speed limit in the right-hand lane of a freeway, you should lose your license.
Yeah, well, that is harsh.
Controversial.
But,
I agree. They certainly should be enforcing that a lot more often than they do. I mean, Eastern Freeway on the way in here, you know, everyone's just hogging the right lane when there's every lane to the left is free and open.
It is illegal to sit in the overtaking lane if you're not overtaking.
Against the law.
Yep.
People don't know that, and because they're not trained to know that.
Yep.
No. It's not something that you're taught.
That's true.
So.
But very controversial, and we will keep going with this because I think it will have a little bit of staying power. There's a thing on Facebook for it now as well. It's like there's a real push on this.
Several.
So we've had a couple of texts in, I believe.
I think we're getting in the middle of a rather funny domestic argument here because, of course, we put the shout out before saying that one partner's Commodore SV6 was better than the other one's IS250, and it looks like the IS250 owner has texted in saying, well, you asked for Bogans to text in. Clearly my boyf is the bigger Bogan in his Bomador. This is really heating up.
That's amazing.
Bomador, I like it.
I do like
it. I like it. And we also have DJ, who has said the older muscle cars are, in his opinion, better. They look nicer. They don't use fancy electronics that can fail. And they took skill to drive, so not any idiot in a flannel could just show off.
That's a very good point.
Very, very true.
That's a very good point.
If you can control an old XT Falcon sideways, mate, you know how to drive.
I agree.
Because those things are hard to drive.
Like a boat. But yeah. Look, boys, outrageously, we've come to the end of the show. I mean,
how do you rate Tony's first show, Tim?
Let's give him some more round of applause.
Criticism. I think he did very well.
Awesome.
Only good, a good debut, I think.
You'll get a big one later.
Yeah.
Hello. When we do the,
hello. Slow
the
down.
Initiation process.
I should tell him about that yet.
No, thank you very much, Tony O'Kane, for being here for the first time on Fender Bender.
It was a pleasure.
Hopefully you will join us again at some point.
Absolutely.
Down the track. Mike Costello, thank you for being here again, you massive Hawthorn fan.
You know, I'm not going to be in the country. I'm not going to be in Australia for the grand final next week. I'm going to be watching it in Los Angeles.
Well, we
and,
will.
And I'm going to be devastated to miss it.
We'll be sad. Well, I will be here at the Joy Studios doing Fender Bender on Joy 4.9.
I'll be driving a fancy Jeep, and I will tell you all about it in 2 weeks' time.
Sounds good. Well, enjoy America. We will see you when you're back. This is Tim Nicholson signing off for Fender Bender for another week. Safe driving.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.